Hello and welcome to the Emerging Cricket Podcast, where we dissect the news and events from cricket's new world. The league phase of World Cricket League Division 2 has just concluded. We've got quite a bit to get through here in, well, not too long now. So let's get started with a bit of Namibian music. Dis dit net van die hout wat die vlamme lek. Dit is my hart se plek. Once again, welcome to the Emerging Cricket Podcast, boys. We've got plenty to get through, so I'm going to get right into it. The conclusion of the World Cricket League Division 2 league phase, and there's been some heartbreak but some triumph. Let's quickly go through the table, and we'll go through the results in just a few moments, but Oman, Namibia, United States of America, and Papua New Guinea have secured one-day international status for the next 2.5 years in the new setup from 2019 to 2021. An unbelievable day of international cricket that we've witnessed on the three grounds today. Boys, I don't even know where to get started. PNG have come from nowhere to finish fourth, with Canada missing out literally by a run on net run rate. Just to give you an indication here, the net run rate separating Papua New Guinea and Canada, Papua New Guinea -0.403, Canada 0.415. That is literally the difference between one-day international status funding and ultimately 36 one-day internationals for the next 2.5 years. Boys, where do we get started with this? Because we've seen some incredible results. Should we go through the Papua New Guinea score to get it out of the way? Because that is probably the most remarkable story of today. So as I do get it up now, Papua New Guinea at one stage were 5 for 35 batting first. They ended up collecting 8 for 221. As I just looked through the scorecard, Yura 8, Valen 9, Amini 6, Chad Soper 2, Legasiaka 3. And then after that, Kipling Dariga, 65 off 91 balls. Sesi Bao, down the order, 80 off 92 balls. 6 fours, 2 sixes in a partnership of 100 and almost 129. In fact, I was about to say 130. And then in reply, Oman crumbled to be all out for 76. They were missing Zeeshan Maqsood and a couple other players. Zeeshan Maqsood with injury. The captain of the side was Kawa Ali. Boys, where do we start with this? Because no one would have predicted a result like that. Bertus, I'm looking at you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as you say, they were 35 for 5 at one point, and we'd written them off almost even before play started today. And I think at 35 for 5, they kind of get the feeling they were at 35 for 5 practically all tournament. Their batting's been, I'd say, up and down at best, mostly down. Fayez Butt doing an absolute number on the top order this morning. And yeah, just that, you don't think they're coming back from that. They're already in a massive net run rate hole. And when we talked about it the other day, we said they just need a win and they need to hope that the other results go their way. Well, at the end of the day, they've actually done it on net run rate with this, what turned out to be just a colossal win over Oman. Kipling Dariga and Sese Bao, who's dropped down the order there, putting together, yeah, like an extraordinary century partnership to dig them out of what was like a hole before they started, and a colossal hole when they were at 35 for 5 again. Remarkable to get runs on the board. But yeah, what we have seen actually from PNG all week is that they've looked like they could probably defend 200. They've just never made 200 before today. So I think at the break, I think that's what caused us. I think even at the lunch break, a lot of us were reassessing and going, you know what? PNG have given themselves a real chance here. They've put runs on the board against a Oman side that you know, they're missing Zeeshan Maqsood, who we saw, I think, picked up a niggle or an injury of some kind. And with 221 on the board, Canada made what turned out to be a slightly below par score, I think, here, but, you know, came through. But not by enough. And then, of course, Namibia by that stage had utterly dominated Hong Kong. I think at the break, somehow, in only half a day, Papua New Guinea had gone from absolutely nowhere and out for the count to in the driving seat, and they're the guys that just got over the line in the end.
I didn't properly introduce you to the show, as you are still technically a special guest. I know that we've had you in our residence for the past, 8 or 9 days or so. So, Bertus, welcome to the show, working on behalf of Creek Buzz for this tournament.
Rather just sort of invited myself this time, didn't I? Just kind of sat down when you guys set up.
Well, anyone, you know, I'm more than happy to have him here. Of course, Nick and Tim, you are with me to my right. We are sort of racing through this. We are giving a slight wrap-up on things. I just wanted to talk about Nisaina Pokhana, finished with figures of 5-for-14 off 7 overs. He was 5-for-7, I believe, at one point. Nick, he's come back. He had some issues of a suspect action, but it seems like he's rectified that and he's come through with a massive performance at the end.
Yeah, at one stage actually in that innings there, I was following on the Crick Info scorecards there. He took 3 wickets in the over and there was a run out, so that just absolutely wrecked Oman's top order there, 4 wickets in an over. And I couldn't be happier for Nisaina Pokhana. He's looked really good all tournament, actually. He's got this sort of tall left arm action and creates a really awkward bounce for the batsman, and I've really enjoyed watching him play. But good that he's finally got some wickets.
I've just noticed, looking at the dismissals today, 4 of them were caught behind by Kipling Darriga and the other one was bowled. So more than conventional wickets for a fast bowler. Absolutely ripping through the Oman lineup. Also wanted to give, well, of course, every single collapse in the history of cricket has a run out. And Kipling Darriga, the keeper, actually was responsible for the run out. And not only did Pokhana end up with 5-for, Chad Soper cleaned up the tail in what proved to be a hugely important 3-wicket haul. 3-for-15 off 7 overs. Made sure that they did finish the job and gave themselves at least a hope that Canada were to fall short on net run rate. Unbelievable result for PNG, livelihoods and things like that rescued after reclaiming their one-day international status, Nick.
Yeah, just a quick shout-out to Kuwar Ali, actually, the Oman captain in Zishan Maksud's absence. He made 29 not out, carried his bat.
Carried the bat.
Yeah. He was probably the only one who displayed any resistance. But just on Darriga there, he was involved in 6 of the dismissals and scored that crucial half-century for them. You know, he even took a stumping off Chad Soper, which is quite a good effort.
I was going to say there was a crazy over there, wasn't there? But is that their lowest carrying bat totals or records that we could...
I'm sure there is. We haven't really had a chance to go through all those records, as it has been
Andrew
such
Nixon,
a crazy
where
day.
Are you?
Yeah, Andrew Nixon, you are listening to the podcast. Please.
We know you are.
We know you are. You are a friend of the podcast, Nixon, and we value your help. You actually gave me a stat bite today in the Namibia game, which we will get to in a second.
I'm just looking at Twitter. He tweeted 4 minutes ago. I just looked at his List A record. My mistake. Talking about the number 11 for USA. So we're just time stamping that for from now. But Nixon, good to have you. Friend of the podcast.
Yeah, a more than valued member of the Associate Cricket Union. Always ready to pick up and dissect anything that is incorrect. He's very quick to correct things, which is good because, you know, you want correct things as I'm looking at.
Should we just call him Lugnuts? Should we just call him Lugnuts?
Oh!
Your veil has been removed.
Look.
That's what I always say on Twitter. If you want the right answer on the internet, the trick isn't to ask the right question. It's to post the wrong answer and Nixon will come and call.
That's outstanding from Bertus. Well played. Sorry, Nixon. We are a massive fan of your contribution to Associate Cricket.
Sorry, sound levels of the podcast too, but it was all in good fun.
So we're going to move on quite quickly. This is more sort of a wrap-up of the show, that has been World Cricket League 2 for the final day. Let's have a look. I think I want to save the US-Canada game till last, potentially due to the controversy. We will have a look at the Namibia-Hong Kong game. And another fact, actually, let's use Nixon as a segue here because he's told us that this could be the second highest List A score by an associate team as Namibia put on 3 for 396. Between you and me, Tim, we commentated this game on behalf of Crick Club's Hong Kong Cricket and ourselves at Emerging Cricket, and we are both convinced that the score is incorrect. Tim, do you want to sort of go through why that is?
Yeah, it appears that the last ball of the 49th over was creamed to the boundary. We both watched it go over. I think it was Anshi Rath coming around from cover towards extra cover. Didn't quite make it, sort of ran over it and then picked the ball up and threw it back. It might have even bounced back off something that was behind the boundary. And the score only went up one. And we kept looking at it because you started talking about 400 the next over. And
yes,
just assuming because the Crick Club's score was running off Crick Info, we knew that someone was scoring that remotely, that, oh, look, it must just be delayed. But then as time went on, we realised, you said, and now they've hit 400.
I was sure they got close. They were either 399 or 400. I thought that they needed, I can't remember, they needed quite a big total off the last over to get there. But I was sure after the last ball they were one off or on the round number of 400.
Yeah, I think it almost hit the scoreboard as well. I'm sure 400, I'm sure I saw it up there. But it, be that as it may, I think there might be a run or two. And if I'm sure if there was a net run rate coming into it with Hong Kong being involved, that might be looked at today and go back and have a look at the stream when we have time. But yeah, that was an interesting one. It would have been a milestone. Did you say second highest list A?
Second highest, I believe, according to Nixon. UAE posted a score of, I think it was 412. Nixon will probably correct me on that, against Argentina in 2007. Just having a look at the scorecard again, it was an onslaught, to say the least. To think that Jean Brennenkamp made 19 of 40 balls and he was easily the lowest scorer. He's been actually quite a find for Namibia at this tournament. He's been fantastic. But Stephen Bard played a second fiddle role and still scored 122 of 128 balls. He looked a little bit nervous early, but and we discussed it during the commentary, but he came out and played some excellent shots. And then JP Kotzer with one of the most amazing associate innings I think I've ever seen. 15 fours and 9 sixes in an innings of 148 of 86 deliveries. I'll go through a couple other cameos at the end there, but we watched a lot of that innings. Well, in fact, all of that innings. Tim doing the commentary on behalf of Crick Clubs and Hong Kong Cricket. And you have to say, I can't really think of a better associate innings, and we had about 10 lost balls today in Windhoek.
Yeah, it was almost overbearing in the end, the number of maximums and just holy middled falls that were just making crazy sounds out of the bat. And I don't want to try and make too much of it when to make it sound like I'm picking it up. It was just amazing. It almost got boring, not in the sense that, oh, I'm being, but the same thing happened over and over.
Yep.
And over. And talking to Francois Erasmus, of course, former ICC associate board member and father of the skipper, he was saying that he was picked out in an inter squad game only a few months ago when Pierre started, and he said, he basically pointed at him and said, that's who I want in my team. And he said there were people yelling for his head after the first four games. He scored,
well,
what, 30 odd runs. And
well, we were talking about it before the game today, and I know a few of us suggested that perhaps it was time for Kotzer not to play, and with Picky of France, you know, in the squad and ready to come in if needed, for him to come out and his celebration after the 100 suggested that he felt the pressure and he needed a score. After the rest day yesterday, he might have gone to the nets. He might have ironed out a few things. But I'll tell you what, if he did iron them out, he ironed them out very well.
Oh, look, he just strikes me as one of those form players, and when he's hitting the ball well, that, you know, nothing can stop him. And I think what we saw from that celebration was a thank you to the coach.
We're knowing
the story now was the tap on the heart and the point and thank you.
The faith that they kept.
Yeah, and I think that was exactly it. So, you know, I went past him just on the way back from lunch. I think I'm still waiting for my lunch pack, but it'll come.
That's true.
It'll come sooner or later. At least, thank you, you and your seagull appetite.
Mine?
I got half of yours.
It was a big meal. There was two in there. I swear, that's probably why they did it.
That's a lie. But let's move on to the cricket. And I went past him. I just like did a little sneaky few left-handed nudges, and I said, thank you, that was very good to watch. And he was just, the way his response was just, oh, thank you, really appreciate it. You just tell a very honest, proud, and just, you just see the relief as well. And just a little snippet of interaction there, but you just see what the person's like. So I was, you know, as you can imagine, the dichotomous is probably the best word I could use about sitting there watching one of the best innings I've seen live ever. And I've watched a lot of cricket, and I've and even be on that side, and obviously rooting for people and friends that I have from Hong Kong, it was just something to behold, and something that I think that you and I and anybody who's at that ground will remember for the rest of their lives.
Well, I have to say, I sort of ran out of superlatives in the commentary that we were doing of times where he did hit the ball for six and starting to make up a couple of cliches as the ball kept going over the fence. David Odhiambo, the reserve umpire, came out and he did quite a lot of running, just literally going back and forth, collecting balls and giving them to... he had the box of kookaburras and gave them to the umpires, especially Langton Rosseri at the end to us, basically calling his name maybe. I actually thought it was more of a Lady Gaga song. It's like, don't call my name, don't call my name. Odhiambo. It was.
We need more balls. We need more balls.
Odhiambo. It was. Honestly, that's what it's. That was what went through
there's
my head.
No more balls. Maybe, there's no more balls.
Odhiambo. Kookaburra. It got ridiculous.
Better still young with his head in his hands there.
Oh,
we are definitely
it.
Not cutting this.
But you're right about what
keep
you said
in,
about
boys. This is internet gold.
You were right what you said about JP Kotzer, and actually, to be fair, a lot of the people that are here in Namibia, World Cricket League and Associate Cricket, even though there's so much on the line, it's very humanised. We have quite a good rapport with a lot of the players here, are always very open in their responses, which is so fantastic. And with so much on the line, it actually shows you just how good these people are as cricketers and as human beings as well.
Yeah, and I know we've spoken about this in the past, and apologies for those that may have heard me say in the recent past and longer, but it's amazing to see how close these nations are as cricketing nations and sharing information and tours and even going on pre-tours before the most important event in, you know, your cricket country's, you know, near future to go and play games against each other. You know, a World Cup, we've got a so-called World Cup coming up. And yeah,
well put.
They've got practice games beforehand, but it doesn't matter if a team in that World Cup doesn't win a game, they go back. They've still got their funding and everything to come in. And this is not a protest call out. It's just the real world story of what's happening. And to these teams, like looking around, you know, Hong Kong have gone from potentially getting $600,000 in funding to now getting less than $200,000 in funding. But to see the way that everybody is, and to get back to your point about the players, I think the beauty of the players that we're talking to are still real people, because they've never lived in a professional cricket bubble. They haven't had their personalities coached out of them. I'm not saying that these real cricketers, so-called real cricketers that don't give interviews and aren't honest, aren't real people, but they're kind of the over media trained world, and of course there's a balance, but the beauty is to sit there and talk to Davey Jacobs and have him talk about stuff and be bouncing back about, geez, I'm not happy about what should I be doing, what do you see, and to actually tell the truth. You know, it's one of those things in this post-truth world, into cliche there, Tim, sorry everyone, but to actually sit down and get honest reaction from these people is quite inspiring. And I think that's a big reason why the four of us are here in Africa to watch sport.
Yeah, just on that point, Tim, we were having a bit of a chat with Pierre de Bruyn, the Namibia coach, and he was saying that, getting a thumbs up for the pronunciation there from Bertus, he was saying that it's been a real eye-opener.
Try hard.
it's been a real eye-opener for him. You know, he was coaching in county cricket just before this, and obviously, you know, if a team comes, you know, dead last in the county comp, they still have contracts next year, they still have a job. And he was saying that, yeah, it's been sort of humbling for him to see all these guys who are literally playing for their livelihoods, and that it's so much more meaningful, I guess, than a lot of full member cricket.
And I think watching the reaction that JP Kotzer had, you know, when he made his 100, it looked like he was playing for his livelihood and then some. And I know I don't think we mentioned it on air, but we're all going to be honest and open here. I think we were... A lot of us were talking about maybe that's the switch you'd make to bring Picky France into the side, especially with Namibia or having to defend what was already a pretty serious net run rate advantage, that you you could get a steadier batsman, maybe not a pure hitter like JP Kotzer. Well, mate, I'm glad they left the pure hitter in, because that was some pure hitting that we all saw today.
And they just gave him the opportunity, rather than dropping him They brought him down to three. Jean Vereeniken came in and opened the batting. Just going through the rest of that innings, JJ Smith and Zane Green. JJ Smith, once again, given the role as the hitter in the latter stages of the innings, with a huge promotion, a thoroughly deserved promotion, but obviously given the situation, he was a perfect slot. Burtis, we've often raved about JJ Smith for this entirety of the tournament. You had him as one of your players to watch. He's made another case to be probably player of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, Ali Khan, of course, has gone and taken some wickets again today, so that once again puts everything in doubt, but otherwise JJ Smith would be clear in a way. I think it's more or less between those two. I picked JJ, yeah, as a player to watch. I thought he looked like he's a guy that could come down and don the order and clear the ropes. I've seen him do that, and I'd seen him do that on scorecards, and you know, he's done a job for Namibia with the ball as well, bowling at the toughest parts, you know, with in the power play at the start and at the death, and gone well for them. So I picked him as one to watch, but I'm not going to claim that I predicted anything like the tournament that he's had, which has just been, I mean, absolutely phenomenal. He's come in here, and I mean, we're talking about Kutzer's innings and the hitting that he did. Kutzer was striking at 170 odd, and JJ came in and hit 61 off 26. That's 200 plus score strike rate. And it's phenomenal. It's the role that he's been given, and he's executed spectacularly so far this tournament.
Yeah, well, 3 fours and 4 sixes. An interesting stat line. Zane Green, he was actually, I think he was brought out to sort of be a nice compliment to JJ, and he was the partner in that amazing partnership against Oman that they had a couple of days ago. He ended up with 41 off 21 balls himself, and an interesting sort of stat bite in his innings. He didn't score a four, but he hit 5 sixes in his knock of 41 off 21 balls. Just shows you how incredible it was that the bowling, it sort of makes for some grim reading. And then just looking at the innings, Tim, we were thoroughly impressed with Anshi Rath and his innings of 76 off 81. Also, Kinchit Shah. Apart from that, there aren't too many things we can praise, but I thought that the quality of the partnership of Anshi Rath and Kinchit is probably worth noting here.
Yeah, on any other day, we'd be talking about that as being a match-winning one or something that set it up. But, you know, disappointingly, they had a good partnership against Papua New Guinea as well. They shared a 75-run partnership then, as did Anshi and Ahsan Abbasi, and they capitulated to only set 222 that PNG ended up chasing down. So yeah, it was great to watch, and like I said, any other day we would have been talking about it. Jeezy hit the ball well and so differently to Kutzer that you think, well, same noise off the bat, along the ground, some of those square drives. I'm glad that you got to see more of him, actually, because I know you've been roaming around the grounds and hear everything about him. But it's tough to say for a team that's now come last in the group stage that their best batter was the best in the tournament, but he just seems to be a class above, and it's almost like he's playing kids cricket to some degree, and I think that gets to him as well, in that watching him skipper, and I know you mentioned it on the call that when he's running and he always seems to want things to go his way, but I think that's that youthful exuberance in him that he wants it to happen right. But I think that today you, as in the Royal, you probably saw the frustration come through in him and the running between the wickets. Yep. And that's probably the worst I've seen of him making enough bad calls. Like we joked about the innings against Canada where he was the only one who looked like he was going to get him out by running himself out. But today, that probably, there were 5 or 6 instances where he called for runs that just weren't on. And that's batting. But I just think if you'd have put him in a Test match situation or an ODI situation playing against the top teams in the world, he'd be right at home.
I think it would be a water to a duck situation. He looks more than comfortable. And yeah, I did mention that in the call, but it wasn't anything against Anshi. It was just that, you know, he wants to be busy. He wants to get going. And it just seemed a little bit like Hong Kong and its players weren't really on the same page. You can see him in the field. He's so frustrated because he knows that everything should have sort of gone on a little bit better there. The body language, I thought, they sunk a little bit, and Anshi tried to stay up, and it was just so difficult when everyone else was so down. Boys, let's head into the third game. We've probably discussed enough about Hong Kong's performance. And Bertus and Nick, you watched a lot of this, and we'll be sort of getting you to discuss and talk about, I guess, everything that we saw at the Wanderers today, because you were the ones to see it. Plenty to kind of talk about, because there's a couple of facets of how this game played out. The USA knew the score that they sort of needed, not to win per se, but to knock Canada out of being in the top four. I want to start with the Canadian innings, because I understand you guys saw an unbelievable performance by Dhaliwal today. Nick, I'll start with you.
Yeah, he's Navneet Dhaliwal. He's looked like he's sort of threatened to get going a couple of times at the top of the order, you know, hit a few fours and then got out to some impatient or ill-disciplined shots. But today he sort of... There was that early spell with Ali Khan where he really was breathing fire. You know, he took two wickets in within four overs and you know, had Canada in all sorts of trouble. And Dhaliwal really, I guess, weathered the storm, you could say. And he was... He played within himself and he looked really disciplined and he looked like he didn't want to get out and he was actually, so he wasn't just playing some flashy shots and you know that you can see that he only hit six fours and three sixes and that most of those were towards the end of the inning, so he was accumulating really well, especially in partnership with Nitish Kumar who again looked really good. He only hit one four in a 58 and those two guys were really effective at manipulating the strike and finding the gaps and turning ones into twos. And that was a really good performance. And this was the thing. Canada batted really well. And then, you know, Davy Jacobs sort of pushed himself up the order and he's a really busy guy and he made 57 off as many deliveries. And Haliger coming in, hit a couple of big blows down there towards the end as well. And so it was just a really... I guess you could say almost a complete batting performance. You know, you had one guy at the top who sort of everyone batted around him and they accelerated nicely towards the end. It was a really good batting performance. But yeah, Dhaliwal was the key to that and very well-deserved 121 not out.
Bertus, I know that you watch particularly the back end of this particular match, obviously keeping a close eye on Afis. We saw, I guess, some contentious thoughts in regards to the second innings of the USA. Talks about net run rate eliminating other teams. I wanted to get your take of it because you did watch more of this game than myself and Tim.
Yeah, it was more or less towards the back end of the United States chase. I think when the PNG game had already concluded, so we knew that PNG had helped themselves a lot with their net run rate with what they did to Oman over at United. And there's both the Canadians and the Americans have a habit of being very quick to run players out to the middle with refreshments and what one assumes would be messages as well. So you'd like to think that everybody knew what the situation was. And it was sort of coming towards the death where, when Netravalka got out and they were two wickets down. It was always going to be a long shot. I think they needed eights. More or less eight from the overs, eight and over going into the last five. Where you'd think, you know, for the United States to get into the final, they needed the win, and net run rate wasn't relevant to them. So getting close to the target was never going to help them. And yet, as soon as they were eight down, it looked like they were blocking and looking for singles. And I thought it was a little strange to watch at the time. And I was hoping that what they weren't doing was going for the target of 212, which would not make any difference to the United States themselves, but would put Canada out of contention. And then when they made the 212, and I think it was the very last over, it might have been with two or three balls to go, there was a cheer going up from the United States dugout. And you sort of think, well... I guess a charitable interpretation is, okay, well, perhaps they were trying to keep Canada out of, a League Two and hoping that, thinking maybe PNG are the weaker team going forward. But the whole thing, frankly, left a bit of a bad taste in the mouth.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I'm a Canadian, so obviously I'm going to be quite bitter about this. But it did look a bit mean-spirited, which is, it's not something you want to see. And, this whole tournament's been played in a really good spirit. You know, all the teams have been, I guess, playing in the spirit of cricket, if we want to go there. But yeah, it looked petty, I think is the best way to describe it. Like they were just trying to do it to sort of just to spite them, really.
You know, observing when I turned up at the end of the Hong Kong game, I sort of ran across thinking there was going to be something to watch, and Bez was kind enough to hang behind to catch the Hong Kong comments and photos. But first thing that Burgess said to me was, oh, this is strange because we've got USA trying to get the runs, as in the total score, at one end, and you've got Canada trying to keep them under 212 at the other. So it was really bizarre. But that was just after the ninth wicket had fallen. And then from then on, it was Canada appealing for every possible dismissal, which, again, is not a good look where we are. And I know what we're getting at here, but anyone that's on the interweb and sort of wondering what was happening and what's a team supposed to do, you know, the fact is, and what was observed, was that they were signalling how many runs to go until they'd knocked Canada out. And that's all I will say on the matter. So that's what we saw happen. So there was a distinct goal to get enough that Canada didn't make it. But I think we've all been in competitive situations before where the juices get flowing and things like that happen. And then when the cheer went up after that score got over 211, yeah, that was clear to everyone at the ground as to why that cheer went up.
No, sorry, Nick. If you want to talk about this, then go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say it is. I guess it's the longest running international rivalry in sport, and so you know they do take it seriously. But yeah, it does seem a bit, as Berta said, a bit of a bad taste in the mouth. Just going back to that USA chase though, I was very impressed actually with Davy Jacobs, and I know we've talked a bit about his leadership. But he definitely impressed me a lot. He kind of won me over because he actually in the first drinks break he swapped out from keeping and gave the gloves to Srimanta Wijayaratne, who's actually a good keeper and he's kept in some domestic games in Sri Lanka because Dave Jacobs is the much better outfielder and he showed that today. He took a really sharp grab at short cover and he got in, you know, under the lid at Silly Point and put a lot of pressure on the Americans towards the end of that chase, and I think we saw, you know, as soon as that PNG result came through and you know one of the refreshments got brought out, David Jacobs really changed his whole strategy from trying to defend 255 to trying to bowl the US out, and you know we saw him put a slip in and you know a short gully and really bring the guys in a ring field. And it almost worked for them, you know. They got within, within 4 runs of qualifying for ODI status, and it was a really good performance as a leader, I think, in the field.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to take this, you know, it's going to be hard for Canada to take positives away from this tournament and the situation that they're in now. But I think if there is one, then I think Davy Jacobs is definitely one of them. And I mean, I'll confess that you know we were. There was a degree of skepticism, you know, with him coming straight into the team and straight into the captaincy immediately after qualifying. And I guess we may have made light of that somewhat, especially in light of his Wikipedia page, which I recommend. but he's proved us all wrong and he's proved his Wikipedia page right, I would say, across the course of this tournament. He's been phenomenal for them. Especially towards the latter stages, you know, he made a sort of a crucial 57 and he was so close to getting them over the line, you know, in the field and with the bat. So he's, I mean, it's a great find for Canada and hopefully he sticks with the team, through the long hard slog, through the challenge leagues to, you know, get their way back up to the top flight.
Let's go through, I guess, the matches for tomorrow with the top 6 finalised. We have Oman playing Namibia in the final here at Wanderers. We have the USA in a rematch against Papua New Guinea at the Afis ground. That's where they also played their league game. And then we have Canada playing Hong Kong at United. There were murmurs of that fifth and sixth place game not being played. We don't really know too much about that. Tim, I know that you had a brief, well, you got a soundbite from Asad Vala, perhaps talking about the importance of gaining one day international status. I actually think it's probably not a bad way to sort of conclude today's show, perhaps just to provide, I guess, a backdrop of how important one day international status is for a team like Papua New Guinea. Do you have that there for us, Tim?
It was a miracle for us. You know, we didn't play the best cricket we could all throughout the week, but today we played the best cricket we have ever played, and the way we played is the way we want to play. I think if we play the cricket we know we can play, we can give every team a good go. And today was a day, and we played the best cricket we could. When we were done, it was a pretty tense or pressured. We were watching the game. It was pretty tense, and all the boys were pressured and didn't know what to do. We just all going for USA at the moment. But thanks to them, and they helped us, and we got into the ODI status, got the what we came here for.
Yeah, good to hear, Asad Vala. Happy to see PNG through. And as disappointed as I am about Canada losing, well, they didn't even lose, you know. They won by 40 runs, but it was one of those weird situations where they had to win by a lot more than just winning. But good to see PNG through. And I think it is, I guess, perhaps this is a way that I can console myself, that I think it is very good for cricket that PNG will be in the ODI Cricket World Cup League 2, because they are a great story and they have a very good development program. So I think they're going to be a good emerging nation over the next few years.
And one point that Burtis made is the fact that just about all their players have come through the youth system in PNG. As a wide overarching, I guess, point, just about everyone in the PNG side has played for PNG at under 19 level. So to see that continuity, I know that they probably don't have the depth. Dawsey in the press conferences before the tournament did mention that, but to be able to compete on this stage and I guess reclaim their one day international status is a testament to their I guess hard work and courage and getting through. Boys, unless there is nothing to add, I think we can just about call it a day here. We did want a quick wrap up. Just want to give another shout out to Wanderers here, which was a fabulous location for some more international cricket as we sit on the balcony reflecting another crazy day of World Cricket League action. Make sure to keep up with news and insight from Cricket's New World, make sure to follow Emerging Cricket on your various social media platforms. A quick thank you to Burtis de Jong, working on behalf of CricBuzz. Thank you very much, Burtis.
Yeah, pleasure as ever, guys.
And once again, thanks to Tim and Nick on behalf of Emerging Cricket, as well as myself, Daniel Beswick, signing out from yet another fantastic day in Windhoek as we sign out with some more Namibian music. Goodbye. Song.